the following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Without freedom of the press, no democratic form of government could exist.
We switch you now to London.
I'm standing on a rooftop, looking out over London.
Good night, and good luck.
Good evening from our CBS newsroom in New York.
NBC presents Chet Huntley and David Brinkley.
From ABC, this is World News Tonight. With Peter Jennings in London, Max Robinson in Chicago, and from our desk in Washington, Frank Rendell.
Good evening.
This historic legislation, the telecommunications law, will create many, many high wage jobs, will create opportunity and better lives for all Americans.
When the press is free, the people of a country are free. When the press is not free, the people of a country are in danger of slavery.
Keeping you informed with information, news, and the views of people making the news. It's the Nicole Sandler Show on NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
The song I was going to play, hold on. I'm having audio problems again today. When I tried to play a video, hold on, and now I have no audio on YouTube. Hold on, YouTube, I'm coming. Are we back? No? Okay. All right, now we should have audio on YouTube. I tried to play a video for you, and it was echoing, and so I can't do that. So, oh, shit. And I didn't bring over my other song. Hold on. I got to do it this way. You know what? I'm going to try it again because this really needs to play. Let's try it again. Nope, not going to work. And I'm so bummed because my other song is not ready to go. and it's Friday. I got to have a comedy bit for you. Hold on one second. I'm going to find it because this is pissing me off. Because I know I downloaded the other one, and it's not working. All right, bear with me one second. I'm gonna play it for you right off the computer. Nothing like a Friday show when everything goes wrong, you know. Lauren Mayer has a new song. I'm really bummed I can't play that other one for you that I was gonna play. But hold on, let me try to do it this way. Best laid plans and all that stuff. I hate it when that happened. That's the wrong one. All right. Damn it. And she doesn't even have it up on this page. All right. I gotta find the email. Bear with me because it'll be worth it. I promise you. Bernie is smoking again, by the way, for the people who are watching on YouTube. I do have these Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren action figures sitting behind me in the studio. And now I just had it here and now I can't get it again. I'm really, really, really sorry. Damn it. And the other one, the song isn't good enough to play it without the video accompaniment. Yeah, maybe I'll do it anyway. I'm so sorry. I'm usually so much better prepared than this. Let's try it this way. All right. Foreign Affairs hearing Wednesday, February 13th, 2019. This is the Parity Project.
Would you support an armed faction within Venezuela that engages in war crimes, crimes against humanity or genocide, if you believe they were serving U.S. interests as you did in Guatemala, El Salvador, and Nicaragua?
I am not going to respond to that question. I'm sorry.
Elliot Abrams is the first who steered a Venezuelan coup. Something the guy has done before. Paint his shore piled on a desert core. If the real purpose was democracy, why send the master of atrocity? Don't you know that I heard it through the grapevine? Breaking a whale spine, then give them help and they can hang line. All following long-term design, money, money,
in 1991, you pleaded guilty to 2 counts of withholding information from Congress regarding your involvement in the Iran-Contra affair. I failed to understand why members of this committee or the American people should find any testimony that you give today to be truthful.
He liked it in old time, you was good, when no one knew what he was up to. He colored up for the genocide, and like the congressman he testified, always pretending that democracy is a good reason for a killing spree. The USA is just a Trojan horse to sneak in weapons for the use of force. We've done it many, many times before. A trail of broken countries, what's one more? The US media will push it through. They like an old-time US coup.
Think the U.S. action there is taking place because we care. It's like saying that Khashoggi died at a surprise party that somehow went awry. This ain't for democracy or human rights. It's on their oil we've set our sights. Don't you know that I heard through the grapevine? Not something mainstream press would headline. Trump said hey, to the borderline, all following the same design. My man will bring back the sway he's got the U.S. kind. Great bang in the sway he's got the U.S. kind. Great bang in the sway he's got the U.S. kind.
It ain't the first Venezuelan coup. The U.S. tried it back in 2002. It was a failure, so what did they do? They used a weapon sure to work they knew. More mighty than a W.N.E. Most deadly weapon in all history. Called economic sanctions by decree. It will make any country bend the knee. And then the U.S. media machine sets the humanitarian smokescreen. The devastation and the death comes slow, and all the blame that falls upon the foe.
The best laid plans and all that. So that's from a group called the Parody Project. Parody, like a song parody, duh. And the guy's name is Don Caron, who sings. He does these songs. They're at parodyproject.com. That one, if you weren't watching on YouTube and you didn't see the lyrics, it was, I wouldn't say funny. It was more a commentary on our U.S. foreign policy, commenting on Venezuela. I will post that video on the blog today at NicoleSandler.com because it's definitely worth going to. Now, the guys know Randy Rainbow, but then again, who is other than Randy Rainbow? Anyway, happy Friday, everybody. We made it to the end of another week. I'm Nicole Sandler. Thank you for being here with us, whether you're live with me at 3 Eastern at NicoleSandler.com, or perhaps you listen on the Progressive Voices Network at 6 Eastern, or you listen on FYI Nation or GDPR or Netroots Radio or one of the other stations that carries the show, or you're listening to the podcast at your own convenience. However you listen, I'm glad you're here, and I appreciate you being part of this community. So yesterday, we were expecting during the show for 2 things to happen. One was the vote in the House on the anti-hate resolution, and the other was the sentencing of Paul Manafort. Well, they both happened long after we got off the air, so it was a while. And we'll get to that. Before we get to the stuff that happened yesterday, let me go into some of the news that happened today, because it's been a busy day so far. And it may get busier. Look, today is Friday. It is indictment day. The Mueller people have handed out indictments on Fridays, usually late on Fridays. So I have a feeling if anything's going to happen, it'll be after we go off the air at 4 Eastern. But there are rumors that the Mueller probe is coming to a close and indictments are expected. There's this one woman. She's I don't even know how to describe her. She's a right-wing agitator, I guess. Louise Mensch. I don't think people on the left like her. I don't think people on the right like her. I don't think anybody really likes her. But she tweeted out something yesterday to the effect of, watch out, tomorrow, indictments coming down for Don Jr., Jared, Ivanka, and I don't know who else she said. But so she's predicting indictments today. So something could happen. I guess we don't know. We'll find out. All right. The other stuff that, all right, as you know, I guess I should just start with the big news first. Let me scroll down. Donald Trump's former campaign chair, Paul Manafort, was sentenced to less than 4 years in prison by a federal judge yesterday on tax and bank fraud charges brought by special counsel Robert Mueller. Yes, Louise Mensch is her name. Answering something in the chat room. So here's the report. Last night, this was a report from MSNBC on the Paul Manafort sentence.
In the first of two prison sentences he will receive in the course of a week, a federal judge in his first case in Virginia sentenced Donald Trump's former campaign chairman to 47 months in prison. That's a month shy of 4 years, with a further 9 month reduction for time already served. A 47-month sentence in this case, where Mueller's prosecutors had asked for 19 to 24 years, almost a quarter century in prison for a man days away from turning 70. Paul Manafort appeared in court today in a wheelchair, wearing a green prison jumpsuit with the words Alexandria Inmate in block letters on the back. His previous chestnut hair coloring has grown out all gray. Federal Judge T.S. Ellis spoke before sentencing. He talked about that recommended prison term guideline of 19 to 24 years from the feds. Quote, "These guidelines are quite high. I think this sentencing range is excessive. Manafort has been a good friend to others, a generous person. He has lived an otherwise blameless life." Manafort also had a chance to speak, saying, quote, "The last 2 years have been the most difficult years for my family and I. To say that I feel humiliated and ashamed would be a gross understatement. I ask for your compassion. I know it is my conduct that has brought me here." And that was as close as Manafort got to an apology. Then came the surprising 47-month sentence.
Okay, so there you go. That's Brian Williams reporting on Paul Manafort's sentence. The fact that this judge is delusional is scary. He lived an otherwise blameless life. Are you fucking kidding me? Yes, Ellis made it very clear he was against Mueller. I've seen some calls today for his impeachment. Here's the thing. Ellis is 78 years old. I'd rather let him serve out his however much time he has left. I'd rather Trump not replace him with a, 35-year-old, just saying. After the sentence was announced, Manafort's attorney made a brief statement.
Mr. Manafort finally got to speak for himself. He made clear he accepts responsibility for his conduct. And I think most importantly, what you saw today is the same thing that we had said from day one. There is absolutely no evidence that Paul Manafort was involved with any collusion with any government official from Russia.
Seriously? No collusion? Where the fuck did that come from? Paul Manafort was performing, as was his attorney, performing for Donald Trump yesterday. They're still hoping for a pardon. All right. So the other story we were waiting on yesterday was the vote in the House on this resolution condemning anti-Semitism and other forms of hatred. It passed by a vote of 407 to 23. 23 Republicans, all of them, All voted against this resolution, which basically says we condemn hate, we condemn bigotry, we condemn racism. It's incredible to me. Among the 23 were Louis Gohmert, no surprise there. Paul Gosar, he's the brain surgeon. He's the dentist from Arizona whose siblings taped a commercial against his reelection campaign. Peter King of New York, who I thought was more reasonable than that. And the number three Republican in House leadership, Liz Cheney. It's not Cheney, it's Cheney. Noted racist and white supremacist Representative Steve King of Iowa voted present, just in case you were wondering. Now, as he was leaving the White House for Alabama and Florida today, yeah, Donald Trump is on the road again. Donald Trump had to weigh in. I'm warning you. I'm going to play 30 seconds of Donald Trump.
I thought yesterday's vote by the House was disgraceful.
You're disgraceful.
Because the Democrats have become an anti-Israel party. They become an anti-Jewish party.
Really?
And I thought that vote was a disgrace. And so does everybody else if you get an honest answer.
Oh, really?
If you
everybody
get an
else?
Honest answer from politicians.
Oh, you know what? Donald Trump.
Thank you very, very much.
Somehow, Lily Allen makes it okay. All right. So on to today's news. The House this morning passed H.R. 1. It's the Democrats for the People Act that would enact wide-ranging ethics reform, expand voting rights, and mandate the disclosure of presidential tax returns. As you'd expect, the Republican Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell has said he won't even bring it up for a vote. The White House has also said that they'd veto it if somehow it did. In case you were wondering, it passed along a party line vote of 234 to 193. Yep. So, that happened this morning. In other news, Bill Shine. Yes, Bill Shine, the former Fox News executive who joined the one who covered up for, Roger Ailes, joined the White House staff last summer to manage Trump's communications operation. Well, he resigned this morning out of the blue and apparently will move to the reelection campaign. Now, I have to wonder how much Jane Mayer's excellent piece on Fox so-called news and its ties to the Republican Party in this White House, what kind of a role that played in this news. Here's how CNN broke the story this morning.
This is really unexpected. We just got a statement from the White House. The president is traveling right now to Alabama. He just landed there where he's going to survey some storm damage. But they're announcing that Bill Shine, the president's deputy chief of staff and de facto communications director, is leaving the White House. Sarah Sanders put out a statement saying that he offered his resignation to President Trump last night and that the president accepted that resignation. They added that he is going to continue to support President Trump and his agenda. And this is news. They say that he'll be going to be a senior advisor to the president's reelection campaign. Then they put out several statements from Bill Shine, the president and the chief of staff, and Sarah Sanders. But I'm going to read you the one from President Trump. He said, Bill Shine has done an outstanding job working for me and the administration. We will miss him in the White House, but look forward to working together on the 2020 presidential campaign where he will be totally involved. Thank you to Bill and his wonderful family. So it's interesting the president is making sure to say that the Bill Shine will be involved in his reelection campaign. But, Kate, there have been questions recently about just how pleased the president had been with Bill Shine. This is someone who was a former co-president at Fox News that the president tried for several months to get in to come to the White House to be his communications director. And it took a few months of the president wooing him and having some dinners with Bill Shine and Sean Hannity before Shine did decide to enter the White House last year. Now, since he's been in the White House, several officials have said that they've remarked that they've noticed him dealing with some visual things with the president. This is a president who's very visual. He cares about the lighting. He cares about where he's standing in a room when he's holding an event. But other than that, there had been some criticism from people inside the White House questioning what it was that Bill Shine did or what he had accomplished serving the president, because they did not believe that during his tenure in the White House that the communications strategy had changed all that much. Now, we're still digging to find out what happened happened behind the scenes, because this is a very abrupt departure, to be clear. But I can also say that Bill Shine was scheduled to go with the president to Vietnam for that second summit with Kim Jong-un. But we found out this week that Bill Shine did not go on that trip because 2 days before he announced that he was not going to be going any longer, and he had essentially been pushed off the trip. So there have been some questions about why exactly that happened. We're still working to find out why, but it does seem to signal something that he was scheduled to go on a pretty significant trip with the president and then 2 days before announced that he was no longer going to be going on that trip. And now we found out he's leaving the White House.
One of the things I read today is that Trump was a little disillusioned with Bill Shine because he wasn't able to turn around negative press quickly enough. So there's that. The February jobs report was released this morning, and whoops, U.S. hiring was at its weakest in more than a year in February, with only 20,000 new jobs created. Forecasters expected a number closer to 185,000. Yes, instead of 185,000 new jobs, 20,000. Disturbing news this morning. Former Army intelligence analyst Chelsea Manning is in jail. She'll be held, according to the judge, until she either testifies before a grand jury or until that grand jury is no longer operating. Again, this is ordered by a federal judge in Alexandria, Virginia this morning. Most of the hearing at which this happened was sealed, but the court was open to the public for this ruling. The investigation, Manning was called to testify and remained secret, but she says she was asked about WikiLeaks, obviously the website she shared classified documents with back in 2010. Boy, in 2010, we had, at least I, had a completely different impression of WikiLeaks, or opinion of WikiLeaks anyway. The Miami Herald has an interesting story today. They're reporting about Donald Trump's Mar-a-Lago Super Bowl party. Yeah, he was there. Also present at the party, cheering on New England Patriots and its owner, Robert Kraft, was a woman who goes by the name of Cindy Yang. Cindy Yang, she's an entrepreneur from China who came to South Florida and opened a chain of Asian day spas. Yes. Among them was the Orchids of Asia day spa, the massage parlor where authorities say they caught Robert Kraft on camera paying for oral sex the morning of the January 20th AFC championship game. And that was his second visit in 24 hours. Now, Cindy Yang's Facebook page, you can find it. Just go into Facebook and search for Cindy Yang. You'll see she lives in West Palm Beach. Her Facebook page has pictures of her with Trump, with a few Trumps, with RNC chairwoman Ronna McDaniel, with Florida's governor Ron DeSantis, and Florida Senator Rick Scott. How interesting. She also attended the Trumpets event, whatever that is, at Mar-a-Lago last month. And the pictures, again, you can see them all over her Facebook page. In a somewhat related story, Chinese authorities have granted the Trump Organization 38 trademarks. This just happened. News as of today. 38 trademarks to include new hotels, spas, escort and concierge services, massage parlors, personal security services, and insurance. Just in case you were wondering, Congress has not approved those China trademarks, by the way, in case you were wondering. Donald Trump, by the way, is on his way back to down here to Florida. He went to Alabama today to, I guess, you know, to survey the damage from the tornadoes last week or this week. And then he's heading back to Mar-a-Lago. I wonder if he's going to see Cindy, whatever her name is. In other news, Bloomberg News is reporting that the Trump administration is drawing up demands that Germany, Japan, and eventually any other country hosting U.S. troops pay the full price of American soldiers deployed on their soil, plus 50% or more for the privilege of hosting them. Just in case you were wondering, I'd like to see our troops come home from around the world. But just saying, Yeah. A White House source has reportedly leaked documents related to Jared Kushner and Ivanka Trump's security clearances to House Democrats. I love how that works. This after the Trump administration refused to hand over the paperwork. Axios reports the House Oversight Committee has obtained those documents that shed light on how the first couple were ultimately granted their security clearances. Yeah, I guess they're not really the first couple. The nepotistic couple, I guess. Congress, I mentioned this story yesterday, but it's so disturbing. Congress is investigating a report that says the U.S. government created a secret database of activists, journalists, and social media influencers tied to the migrant caravan, and in some places placed alerts on their passports. Apparently, the CPB officials in San Diego made a list of 59 reporters, lawyers, and activists who were to be targeted for questioning when crossing the U.S.-Mexico border. It's stunning. But the news that's here since yesterday is that Congress is now investigating this report. Remember that citizenship question that the Trump administration wants to put on the 2020 census? Well, a second judge yesterday ruled against it and has also raised red flags about Secretary of Commerce Wilbur Ross. MSNBC's Chris Hayes explains.
For the second time this year, a federal judge has taken the extraordinary step in ruling that Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross acted in bad faith and broke several laws when he asked a citizenship question to the 2020 census. At first glance, this might not seem so controversial, but adding a citizenship question to the census would, according to civil rights advocates and Census Bureau officials themselves, scare off non-citizens from being counted lead to an undercount in the country's immigrant communities. What that means is states with significant immigrant populations, like the 18 states suing to block the citizenship question, could be shortchanged when it comes to federal funding and resources, even representation in Congress. Last year, Ross said that there was no evidence that the response rate would drop once the citizenship question was added. He told Congress it was the Justice Department that, quote, initiated the request, which would lead to doing a better job of enforcing the Voting Rights Act of 1965, because we know how obsessed the Sessions DOJ was with that. Well, it turns out none of that was really true. Court documents revealed that Ross actually came up with a citizenship question.
Shocker.
After Steve Bannon asked Ross if he would be willing to speak with Kansas Secretary of State Kris Kobach about a possible citizenship question. The lies that Ross is told are so egregious that last month, when a federal judge ruled against the decision to add that question to the 2020 census, he wrote that Ross's explanations for his decision were unsupported by or even counter to the evidence before the agency, and that it was not in accordance with law. Then yesterday, a second federal court found Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross acted in bad faith, broke several laws, and violated the constitutional underpinning of representative democracy. According to the judge, in short, the inclusion of the citizenship question of the 2020 census threatens the very foundation of our democratic system and does so based on a self-defeating rationale.
There you go. So that's two courts that have ruled against this citizenship question on the census. Stay tuned. And finally, today is International Women's Day. And March is Women's History Month. It figures that the Trump administration marks this occasion by rescinding the International Women of Courage Award it had offered to Finnish investigative journalist Jessica Arrow after reportedly unearthing some old tweets that were anti-Trump. You can't make this shit up. Foreign Policy reported yesterday that Arrow was, quote, originally chosen for the award because of her investigative work exposing Russian troll factories and had, quote, regularly tweeted criticism about Trump's sharp political rhetoric and attacks on the press. Yeah, so they rescinded the award. Happy International Day of the Woman to you. And because we are celebrating International Women's Day, we've got our friend Amy Simon. She's a cultural historian. She is the woman behind the One Woman Show, and it's now a full cast show as well. I'm not sure which version is being staged this weekend in Los Angeles, but Amy will be here in just a moment to tell us. So don't go away. I'm Nicole Sandler at NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network, and Amy Simon will be with us next.
These are the sounds of crushed souls. The sounds of despair from former radio personalities, languishing in the purgatory of corporate consolidation. These former radio personalities have lost their livelihoods, not because they weren't entertaining or informative, but because they don't meet today's corporate terrestrial broadcast standards of being smelly, overweight douchebags, seething with vein-popping hatred. These radio refugees and their audiences have since migrated to the Internet, but their struggle continues as the quest for monetization ensues. Nicole Sandler is leading the way to reestablishing thought-provoking and entertaining radio. And you can help by clicking the donate button on NicoleSandler.com. Donate today, or as much and as often as you can. Dry the tears of listeners by removing the rotting stench of corporate radio. Won't you help? It's time for Amy Simon of She's History, the most dangerous women in America, then and now.
All right. Those of you who've been with me for a while, have been listening to the show for any amount of time, will certainly recognize Amy Simon. She used to be a regular. She used to do a weekly slot on the program talking about, her story. Amy Simon calls herself a cultural historian. She's spent the last, God, how many years has it been now, Amy? Like 10 years researching women's history. Time flies, doesn't it? Hi, Amy Simon.
Hi, Nicole. You badass.
For those who don't know you, explain. You are, Amy and I met, God, I want to say it's got to be 25, 30 years ago already, when I was doing music radio in Los Angeles. Amy was a record promoter, and that's how we met. We became fast friends and bonded over the years. She became a stay-at-home mom when she had her kids, and did a one woman show in LA that ran for years and years called Cheerios in My Underwear about being a stay at home mom. She's now has shifted her focus onto women's history. So Amy, for those who don't know the story, what made you decide to go in this direction?
Well, first, I guess I was always a feminist, and when I started raising my daughters, the way that women and girls are treated and educated just sort of slapped me in the face when my 10-year-old daughter Rose came home from school one March, which is Women's History Month, and told me she was doing her women's history report on Cher or Janet Jackson because she got to dress like them. So that sort of planted the seed. And after a while, I just started to sort of simmer. And then when Hillary Clinton was running for president and I was getting a divorce and going through the family legal system, it was just sort of a harmonious convergence of events. I couldn't get a job. My husband had left the country. We were going through the, 2006, 7, 8 recession, depression. I was dealing with maternal profiling, ageism, couldn't get a job anywhere. And so I ended up going into the library where I had done all my research for Cheerios in My Underwear, which was, a fun, somewhat of a lighthearted show, but it did, talk about a lot of statistical stuff about motherhood and how mothers are valued and not valued. And so I went back into the library because I was being treated so, I couldn't believe the family legal system was so sexist and terrible, and I thought I'd go find out about women's rights. And I ended up falling into a rabbit hole because I found a book called Women's Progress in America. And I turned it to the W page because all the events, everything was listed alphabetically. And I saw a picture of Victoria Woodhull, who was the first woman to run for president in 1872. She was called the prostitute who ran for president. She had asked Frederick Douglass, the black abolitionist who President Trump thinks is still alive. She had asked him to
I
be
hear
her
he's doing. I hear he's doing
and
really
I
good work. I hear he's doing really good. I hear he's doing really good.
Yeah, I hear
work.
He's doing well too. I actually put that in the show now. It's a little laugh.
Okay.
But when I saw the picture of Victoria Woodhull and Frederick Douglass, I started to think about Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama. And I just really sat down and started reading, and I just went into a whole different, and I ended up writing a play. And if I didn't get divorced, if I didn't have two daughters, if I wasn't raised in the 70s with Gloria Steinem and Ms. Magazine and all of that, I would have never, ended up where I am now.
Right.
So I started I just started with an essay about Hillary Clinton and the women who have run for president, which I back then, which was 2007, is when I first got up and did a story salon here. In Los Angeles, these story salons are very popular. I don't know if you've heard of The Moth. It's personal storytelling by people who write and perform their own stories, and that's how She's History started.
Huh.
So I've been doing it that long, but now I'm just obsessed. I have a library at home that is just, I have to buy more bookcases. All I do is read about wonderful women,
uh-huh.
and I have some great stories to talk about today. So my play, She's History, is a solo play, the longest running in Los Angeles, and yes, the solo version is this Sunday, March 10th at 3 p.m. at the Lounge Theater, and anybody can go to sheshistory.com and get the information. And yes, I have been working for the past 4-5 years on developing it into a full cast version because I want to get the stories of the women out there. The play has tons of, you know, stories. I don't become all the women, but I tell stories or show pictures or become, there are about 30 women in the play.
Wow.
But they're not getting out there. So I started to work on a full cast version, all female full cast version, which is similar in tone and has some of the stories from the solo play. And I've done a few readings, and I wish I could say I was doing it this weekend or this month, but it's really quite an ambitious play. There are 39 roles. Some of them are just, you know, a scene or a line, but some of them are lots of scenes and characters. And there's like 10 or 11 women that I need to gather together to work on it. And I never have trouble getting them together, but it's just hard.
Yeah.
Scheduling, I don't pay, nobody gets paid. So I'm keeping it going. I'm still working on it. But for this month, I'm doing She's History. I'm also doing a performance of the solo show on March 23rd at the Cerritos Rancho Historic Site in Cerritos in Southern California.
Nice.
So I got a few things going on.
Okay, so people who are in Southern California who want to go to the show, either it's Sunday, right? This Sunday? Or
this Sunday, March 10th.
In Hollywood?
In Hollywood.
And then
the Lounge Theater.
Okay, so go to sheshistory.com. There are still a few tickets available, although I hear it's selling very well.
You know, what happened was I got a call a few days ago from a woman who said, and this was so exciting, she said, I have a group of black young teen girls who want to come see the play.
Wow.
And I was like, this is why I wrote it.
Yep.
She said there would be about 20 of them, but I haven't heard from her yet. And the theater is one of these intimate Los Angeles theaters. There's about 45 to 50 seats.
Hey, so
I'm already
captured. Right.
Pardon?
That's half the theater.
Yeah, so I haven't heard back from her, so I don't know if she's coming, and that's why I don't know if I'm sold out. But, you know, I can fit anybody in at any time.
Okay. So go if you can make it. If you're in Los Angeles, go to sheshistory.com because it's a wonderful – I still haven't seen it because I'm stuck down here in Florida. But Laffy has been there. Laffy has seen the show and just raves about it. So,
yeah,
Amy
she's
Simon,
seen all the versions.
Yeah, oh, she has. So today is the International – Women's Day. What happens? What's that about?
Yeah, so, you know, I'll tell you, listen, I actually called in sick today, not because I'm doing your show, because I actually was sick during the night. So I ended up watching TV, and I was watching all this celebration of Women's International Day, which is wonderful that we're celebrating, because, you know, women are so more empowered, and we've made so much progress, and I always say we had to make progress. We could only make progress. Women's International Day actually started with the Socialist Party in 1908, and it was all about women organizing to protest labor laws.
Hmm.
Now, I don't know if you remember, I know your listeners probably will, when Elizabeth Warren announced her bid for her candidacy for the presidency, she was in Lawrence, Massachusetts in front of a factory. Because back in 1912, as part of this whole movement of women organizing for labor laws, the women protested. It was called the Bread and Roses Strike. And that's where Elizabeth Warren made her speech, you know, her announcement speech, because women walked out. I mean, for women to organize and get equal rights, I mean, it's been going on forever, and I do tell a lot of this in She's History, because the first time women actually organized together was in the early 1800s, and they organized to get free the slaves. If it weren't for the women, the 13th Amendment would have never been passed. I mean, they went around the country door to door, and they got like 400,000 signatures to present to the Congress to get, you know, the 13th Amendment passed. They were completely part of that. It would never have happened. So, and then when they organized to get their own right to vote, it took 72 years.
You know, right.
We're coming up to the 1920 anniversary the 2020 anniversary of the 1920 passage of the 19th Amendment. So anyway, back in 1908, 1909, we had the first strike here in America. It was called National Women's Day. It was observed for the first time here, and it was part of the garment workers' strike in New York. A lot of stuff happened in New York.
Right.
So that was the first time we really, you know, I could tell you all the statistics because they're crazy, but it really started in 1909, 1910, and it was in 1911, the shirt waist factory fire was
the
a real turning point.
The shirt waist factory, right.
Yeah, and that's, you know, in 1909 when the women first protested, for this, they were protesting the shirtwaist factory. There wasn't a fire yet; they were just protesting.
Wow!
It was the Triangle Shirtwaist, and they're, you know, they did this big march. They thought maybe they'd get about 3,000 people. They had 20,000 workers.
Wow! And that was before social media.
Before social media, yeah. And so, yeah, you know, as Tina Fey says, which I love to quote her, "Bitches get shit done."
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it takes, you know, it takes a woman half the time. So, anyway, that's how Women's International Day started. And then in 1975, I think it was, that's when the United Nations began to really celebrate it. And I'll bring up, because people say to me, oh, it's Women's Day, it's this day. So today, March 8th, and I also gave birth to a little girl. I actually, my daughter Ruby was born today.
Oh.
March 8th, 22 years old, I think of all. But in 2012, the United Nations began what's called the Day of the Girl, the International Day of the Girl, and a lot of that was honoring Malala Yousafzai. I think your listeners know her story. I tell this in my play, She's History. She was the Pakistani girl who was blogging for the BBC about life under the Taliban, and when she was 14 years old, they shot Malala Yousafzai in her school van, in her head, but she recovered. She went back to England and studied, and she, miraculously, I mean, they shot her in the head, and she recovered.
Yeah.
And so the United Nations honored her, and they started, not necessarily because of her, but she now has a fund, the Malala Fund, where she's all about educating women. I mean, that's why she was blogging for the BBC. Also, her father was an educator and a wonderful, wonderful man. And, you know, in Pakistan and many of the countries around the world, women are not allowed to be educated,
mm-hmm.
which brings me to today, because there's something called global feminism. Annie Lennox, Ed Sheeran, a bunch of people. I bet you don't know this, Nicole.
No.
I didn't know it either until I saw it this morning on TV. Annie Lennox has been an activist, a women's rights activist forever. She's got this organization called Hashtag Global Feminism. Because, like I said, it's wonderful to celebrate today, and all the women in Congress, and I'll get to that in a minute. But today, 2019, we're still in big trouble. I mean, there are one in three women and girls that are impacted by physical or sexual violence in their lifetime.
Oh, yeah.
One in three. This is global.
Yep.
22% of the world's parliamentary seats, only 22% are women.
Mm-hmm.
There's still terrible problems with education and domestic violence. I mean, I think we all know how bad it is. I mean, it's ridiculously bad. So when people say we make progress, I'm like, yes, we could only go up and make progress. So, you know, it's great. And anybody can go to Malala.org or, you know, just Google her and you'll see her story. Actually now, she's in her second year at Oxford University, and from all accounts, she's going to be running Pakistan. She's an unbelievably brave, inspirational girl. She's all about education for girls. She raises money because girls aren't educated. You know,
right, and she has said all over the world. She has said she wants to be president of Pakistan someday.
Yeah, and she will.
Yeah,
she
I
will.
Believe it. I believe it.
But also, you know, March is Women's History Month, and I think it was Bella Abzug whose story, I do a lot about Bella Abzug in both of the plays, because she was an amazing New York congresswoman, Battling Bella, they called her, and one of her many quotes was, well, if you've ever heard, a woman's place is in the House of Representatives, that's Bella Abzug. But she was like, oh, they gave us a day, and then they gave us a month, maybe someday we'll get the whole enchilada, she said, you know, but we lost her in, like, 1998. But Women's History Month actually started in California, right here in, you know, Los Angeles. There was a woman named Molly McGregor, a teacher, who was teaching school. And she had a student, a boy. He was taking her history class. And he had just seen the first issue of Ms. Magazine in 1972. And he asked the teacher, he said, what's the woman's movement? and she didn't know how to answer him. So she ended up saying, oh, that's a good question. Let me get back to you on that. And it was a Friday, she said. And when she went home, she started to look at all her books to find some women's history, and she found one book. So it's a longer story, and if anybody wants they can email me, and I'll send them my blog about it, because because of Molly McGregor, because a boy asked her what is the women's movement, she ended up realizing there were no books. There were no books in the library, and she assigned her class an assignment to go find out about women. And they found between 3 and 7 books in the library. She wanted to do an analysis on the resources for women's history. That was the assignment. It was a project. It was called Sexism in Education. And this is 1972 when, the second wave of feminism was really an exciting time. And she had 18 boys and 18 girls, and they find like this one book with one. They didn't even find anything. Nothing was checked out because nobody had been assigned to even research women's history. So the boys ended up doing this slideshow back then, or a big presentation on Seneca Falls. Now, Seneca Falls, I do a whole thing about it in She's History. Seneca Falls is in 1848 when women organized and had their very first public meeting ever. It was Elizabeth Cady Stanton and Lucretia Mott and a bunch of men and women, but not Susan B. Anthony, and everyone thinks she was there, but she wasn't. And they organized to have a meeting for women's rights, and it was just unbelievably radical. And they managed to get a bunch of people together. They put an ad in the paper in Seneca Falls, which is a sleepy little town in upstate New York. And previously to that, Elizabeth Cady Stanton, who grew up very rich and very privileged, her cousin Gerrit Smith was one of the richest men in the country. His house was a stop on Harriet Tubman's Underground Railroad. And so she grew up surrounded, by the abolition movement. But her father, who she always wanted to please, he was actually a big sexist. And Elizabeth Cady Stanton was the architect of the women's movement. She was absolutely amazing. And when she was 11 years old, her one brother died. His name was Eliezer, and he was 20 years old, and he died. And he was the apple of her father's eye. And like I said, this was a very well-to-do family. Her father was a judge, a lawyer, a congressman. He was an associate justice to the Supreme Court, a really, really big influence on her. And she had 4 other brothers, but they all died as babies or in childbirth. And back in those days, the early time in our country, 1700s, 1800s, death and childbirth went hand in hand. So it was always a miracle when a baby actually survived and grew up. So Eliezer, the last surviving boy, he dies when he's 20 years old. Her father was beyond grief-stricken, and she tells this very famous story. She went to see her, find her brother in the casket in the dark room, and she sees her father sitting in the chair. She sits in his lap and puts her arms around him, and he mechanically puts his arms around her, and they sit together silently grieving, and finally he says to her, "Oh, my daughter, I wish you were a boy."
Oh. Hmm.
And she says, uh-huh. And she says, "I will try to be all that my brother was." And she really did try. I mean, she spent the rest of her life trying to prove to her father that she could do what a boy could do. And she studied Greek, and she learned how to play chess and manage a horse. But her father never really appreciated it. He just never thought a girl could do the same things as a boy. Thank goodness he was a sexist, or we would have never had the accomplishments of Elizabeth Cady Stanton, she meets Lucretia Mott. She ends up getting married, and she goes on her honeymoon to this 1840 anti-slavery convention in London. And she meets Lucretia Mott. Lucretia Mott was a Quaker minister, which a woman minister was just unbelievable back in the 1800s. Women were not allowed to speak in public. They couldn't own anything. They couldn't inherit anything. They were thought to be intellectually inferior. Their brains were thought to be tiny. I mean, it's just unbelievable what we have come from. And she meets this amazing woman, Lucretia Mott, who was sort of like the Gloria Steinem of her day. And she becomes enamored with her, and Lucretia Mott mentors Elizabeth, and they get to this big meeting, and they're not allowed in. They're not allowed to sit in the meeting. They have to sit behind a curtain.
Oh, God.
And this really pisses off Elizabeth Cady Stanton. And she says, we should have our own meeting, our own convention for women's rights. And 8 years later in Seneca Falls, that's what they did. And they create this document called the Declaration of Sentiments, which was modeled after the Declaration of Independence, our founding fathers, a list of 18 grievances against King George. And the women just substituted men for King George. All men and women are created equal.
Mm-hmm.
They create this document. Elizabeth Cady Stanton says, and also we need to vote. We need suffrage. Resolution number 9, suffrage. Well, the place went crazy, and everyone said, are you nuts? Even Lucretia Mott, her best friend, said, oh, Lizzie, that would make the convention ridiculous. But Elizabeth said, no, we need to vote. And then Frederick Douglass gets up and stands next to her and says, yeah, you, without a suffrage, without representation in the government, nothing will happen. Mm-hmm. And they convince enough people, men and women, they sign this document. It gets published in the New York Herald, a big paper, and they call it the most shocking and unnatural incident ever recorded in the history of womanity.
Oh, my God.
I mean, the whole place goes nuts. It was like, what is womanity? Anyway, do we know? We don't know.
No. We don't know.
So that's how the whole, you know, women asking to vote started way back then. And then these women's rights conventions, they start popping up all over America. So Joanna Truth, she goes in 1851, she does her iconic "And Ain't I a Woman" speech at a women's rights convention. And, you know, it took so long for women to get the right to vote. And Elizabeth Cady Stanton, it turns out, she was the very first woman in our country to run for office in 1866. She ran for office as an independent for the state of New York. She couldn't vote, but she could run. That's how crazy things
are. That's wild.
Right? She got 24 votes out of 12,000.
Okay.
And so it wasn't until 1917 that Jeanette Rankin became the first woman elected to Congress. She was our first female congressperson. They had to build a ladies' room for her.
Wow.
So what I love about doing She's History is when I first started to write it, and I would talk about when Bella Abzug joined Congress at the age of 50 in 1971, there were, I think, 15 women in the entire Congress. There were like 9 in the House and 3 in the Senate, and she was one of the women. And look at us today.
Yeah, it's amazing.
I mean, so this is, it's a beautiful thing. I mean, we still are not equal. However, we have 127 women in Congress, 25 in the Senate, 102 in the House. I mean, so when people say, oh, we're really making progress, I'm like, well, when you start with nothing, it's pretty easy to go up. But it hasn't been easy. It hasn't.
Right.
It took us 72 years. It took Alice Paul going on hunger strikes and women organizing and battling and fighting and getting beaten up. And they would march and have lit cigars thrown at them. They would picket the White House. They got thrown in jail. I mean, to be where we are today is because of what blood, sweat, and tears, death, hangings, and every other thing that
right.
women went through.
All that's true.
But
I'd be remiss if I didn't mention that here we are. It's March 8th, 2019, and we still don't have an Equal Rights Amendment.
Oh, of course. Oh, you know, there was a really great show on CNN. I know we have all our issues with different things, and it was called something about making it count. And now I'm sorry, I'm spacing a little bit on the Ruth Bader Ginsburg movie.
RGB. RBG. It was called RBG.
Yeah. I know it's called RBG. Like I said, I'm sorry, I'm spacing a little bit. But they did this great sort of history of how of the women's movement from the 60s, which was really the second wave of feminism.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it took the women, you know, organizing like that for us to get the right to vote. And it was 1920 when it was finally passed.
Yep.
And it was 72 years from when Elizabeth Cady Stanton and Susan B. Anthony first went to Congress in 1868 and presented Congress with, you know, they basically, the argument was that the 14th Amendment gave women the right to vote. If you're born a citizen, you have the right to vote,
mm-hmm.
except you have to be a white male. So
right, there's that little pesky details.
Sorry, and back to the Equal Rights Amendment.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, Alice Paul wrote the Equal Rights Amendment in 1923. It was called the Susan B. Anthony Amendment. And we almost got it passed in the 80s. That's why I was talking about the CNN documentary, because it was a woman named Phyllis Schlafly, who literally was so, she was like the Trump of her day in a way, because she was a brilliant orator, she was a great organizer, and she was a complete anti-ERA-er. She stopped that sucker dead in its tracks. She died, which I'm, you know, she's not with us anymore.
Which is not as
bad.
But
she did a lot of damage.
Yes. Yeah. Because here we are again, all these years later, and it still hasn't passed. And if I remember correctly, because it's been a while since I've dealt with the subject, but I think the only like a couple of states were needed to ratify it.
Yep.
But
we
it
were
doesn't
like 2 or 3 states short.
Right.
We're really close. It's going to pass. We're really, really close right now.
Yeah, but it doesn't seem like anyone has taken up the mantle to try to make it happen.
There's a lot of stuff going on behind the scenes. Trust me.
Okay.
I think we're waiting on one state. Like, literally, it's going to happen.
Okay. Well, good, because we do need it. So it is an exciting time for women. You know, with this was the year of the woman, the 2018 election, really, we saw women stepped up. And I've got to say, it's women of color who I think, you know, turned out the most votes for the Democrats. And without them, I hate to think where we'd be today. If we didn't have the House of Representatives being flipped to the Democrats, I don't even want to think where we'd be. And so now we look towards 2020, when the Democrats need to take back the Senate, retain the House, and win the presidency, if we have any hope for our future. But I worry, because Amy Simon is with us, again, cultural historian and the woman behind She's History. If you can find more information at sheshistory.com. She's got a show coming up in Los Angeles this Sunday that you can go see. Again, all the details at sheshistory.com. But I still, out of all the candidates, have a thing for Bernie Sanders. I still like his ideas best. I still think, you know, he's the reason we're talking about Medicare for all. He's the reason we're talking about a $15 an hour minimum wage and all that. But I worry that this is not the year for an old white guy.
You know, first of all, I'm so with you. I've been a big Bernie and Elizabeth Warren fan. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I do listen to the show. You know, I sneak listen at work, Nicole. And I know how you feel, not just because we're buds, but... I'm putting all my money right now on my vote into a seasoned candidate with a record that I can... I mean, I saw Elizabeth Warren speak. I have her book. I know her life story. I mean, she's the real deal.
I agree.
And Bernie, you know, you're right. He's... I worry, too, about another white man, and now they're saying that Joe Biden is going to enter the race.
Yeah,
I'm thrilled that there are five women running, and I will say that when I put my play together and I put little movies in it and little media, and it was so much fun this time around to create a new movie and show, you know, the progress we've made from the women who couldn't even vote, and we have five women running. I get so emotional. I cry every time I do it because, you know, we have five women running. It's like, it's beautiful. But I do, you know, worry also about who's going to get the nomination. But I guess we'll just have to see, you know, the best candidate and all that.
Exactly.
But I heard about a poll today that Republican or moderate Republicans, I don't know if it's women or just moderate Republicans, would rather vote for a moderate Democrat than who could beat Trump than a Republican that might not, or than a Democrat that couldn't. Like they're not really looking at gender or any or
good
or anything like that.
Right. Well, I agree. I just think this is, you know, this is the time for women, and it kind of sucks that Bernie, I think, is still the best candidate out there. But I love Elizabeth Warren too. I've got both of them sitting behind me on my desk here, a little action figure.
Oh, I know.
Form.
I see them.
So anyway,
I love them both too.
And hopefully, we'll have an equal rights amendment to go along with our first female president or vice president. We'll see.
Yeah, but I will also say, as somebody who, you know, is this obsessive women's history person, and, you know, I'm always studying and reading about women, and I've been doing my play since 2010, and I will say for sure that this last year, since Trump got in, there has been a very different energy around women. It's part of the Me Too movement. That's a big part of it. And also the indivisible movements and the marches. I mean, because I have this perspective of studying our history, women get pissed off, they organize, and they make things change.
Right.
And, you know, you have to get angry. I'm not talking about being violent.
Nope.
But, you know, back in 1914, when we were about to enter, or 1617, when we were entering World War I, women still couldn't vote, you know. They didn't get a federal amendment until 1920. Well, the women stood in front of the White House. They were called the Silent Sentinels. This was Alice Paul's Women's Party women, and they stood with these signs saying, "Mr. President, how long must we wait for liberty?" For 18 months, they never said a word. They just stood there in the rain, in the snow, and they never said a word. And the president got so pissed off because they started to say, you know, President Wilson hates women, and they were going after him, which he deserved to be. So they were arrested, and they were thrown into jail. It was terrible. It's called the Night of Terror. They went into this horrible. They were beaten. They were brutalized. I mean, it's quite a terrible story. There have been movies about it. But, you know, that's what it took. They weren't violent, but they had violence on them.
Right.
But women will always stand up and organize and get shit done.
And I fully believe that, and I think they're going to do it again, or we're going to do it again. You know, when you have a guy who brags about grabbing women by the pussy, getting elected to the presidency, it gives us a good motivation. Thank you. Amy Simon, love you. We're out of time. Got to go. Find Amy at cheesehistory.com and go see her show this Sunday. Thanks, Amy. I'll see you guys on Tuesday. Have a great weekend, everyone. Bye.